This
is URN.
Hello and welcome to Nerd & Mouse, the weekly show where we talk about all things nerdy. My name's Philippa, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm joined by...
Hello, my name's Jamie, my pronouns are he, him.
My name is Tina, and my pronouns are she, her.
My nerdy things, well, this week it was my birthday. So I got some nerdy presents, including I got a little dragon pendant from my mum, and basically confirmation that my parents also realised that I am a nerd. What about your nerdy things?
I don't know if this counts as nerdy in particular, but I have had to read an awful lot of Dan Brown stuff for the purposes of research. And I say research, I mean, don't anyone get the opinion that I'm reading Dan Brown for historical accuracy. I'm reading it for research on writing a sort of conspiracy thriller with sort of Dan Brown undertones. I'm going to parody him, it's not...
As myself... Well, the past week, I have been watching a lot of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix.
With Michelle Gomez, you love her.
Yep, it's based off of a comic book, so I feel it's appropriate for me to mention this.
I love
But the other thing I wanted to mention, and I haven't been on the show since Christmas time, but my brother got me a gift that is very nerdy, and he bought me a bunch of dice with like little clovers in them, like four-leaf clovers and stuff in it, and he also bought me... one of the D&D add-ons called Tales from the Yawning Portal. And they're all great. I've looked through some of them. But my favorite is the Tomb of Annihilation. They used to be Tomb of Horrors.
Yeah.
One of the original Gary Gygax.
Oh, nice.
And they adapted it to 5e so I could bring it into my company. Mm. I'm all so excited. And another fun fact. This is exceptionally nerdy. But... it was the same... Tomb of Horrors was the one that was used in Ready Player One in the book. So it's the first... it finds the first key against the Sarah. The Lich. So...
You're covering all nerdy movies.
Exactly.
Excellent. We'll talk about common nerdy movies. I think the topic we're going to talk about today will cover pretty much all areas of nerddom. Slightly more serious topic today, we're going to talk about sort of author and audience. Should we keep consuming media if the creator of that media is or becomes problematic? So what sparked your thinking of this topic is J.K. Rowling, once again, did a tweet, this time a pretty bad tweet. I think we can all agree that she avowed herself with the TERFs, so people who are against trans women, people in general, and was like, yeah, I'm siding with this person, and these are my views. And then people said, J.K., that's a bad idea. And she doubled down on it and didn't keep it away. Can't remember the exact phrasing, but it wasn't great. And she hasn't backed down at all. It's still up on her Twitter, I checked. And basically, I think the question is, you know, do we still keep consuming stuff if the person who's created it starts being, like, spouting bad views, basically?
I just want to say, before we start, if you're looking for a drinking game on 4:30 on a Sunday, have a shot every time we say J.K. Rowling in a derisive tone, because I imagine that's going to be a lot of fun.
Also, probably how often we say allegedly, because obviously everything we've read is going to be coming from online sources or from the media, so we can't confirm or deny if it's true. So if you're a lawyer listening to this program, one, thank you for listening. But two, don't sue us, because all of this is prefaced by the term allegedly in all of the cases.
I think the most important thing that we can contribute to this at the moment is that discussion of should we continue to consume that media. Now, regardless if you agree with J.K. Rowling or not, we're using this as an example to work on. But for the three of us, we have agreed that it is problematic, especially for someone like myself. I find it sexually problematic, but we want to make sure that we're exploring the idea that if something is problematic and people view it as problematic, what should the next actions be as consumers of media? And I think that's where we want to focus.
So do we have any initial first thoughts?
Obviously, you can't monetize a tweet, so there's not too much to be said in terms of how do you handle that, because, you know, if in a way you can... Okay, I know where I'm going with this, which is that generally when there are sort of turfy accounts, obviously you can't put money towards them, so you're not actively endorsing turfs.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can share them and stuff, but also sort of replying to them can sometimes just lead to their their spread, because if you think, oh, I've got a pretty clap back to this, which is something everyone does every now and again, you can do that, but it will just mean that their rhetoric gets onto your page and reaches more followers than they ordinarily would, and you've effectively cracked in the market for them.
I want to put just a bit of information. TERF stands for Trans-Exclusionary Radical Feminist. It is...
it's ironic, because I don't think you can really give them feminists.
Radical,
for that
matter. But it's a term that's often used by people who are pro-trans. Another term like here in this discussion, not of our discussion, but discussions around this, is called gender critical. It's the way TERFs have kind of rebranded themselves. But those are kind of two terms around it. If you read anything about it, that's what this is specifically regarding. And it's typically about trans women, but there are questions about trans men and these as well. So.
And also, I think, just to kind of also backtrack a little, I think J.K. Rowling has been tweeting a lot of things over a long period of time that have like created a lot of controversy. So also the fact that she retroactively made Dumbledore a gay man but didn't in the books. She's never in the books like explicitly said about, for example, said Jeremy Goldstein is the ghost, like not ghost, the dear student at Hogwarts, but she never said that in the books and things like that. So she's been doing a lot of stuff where she's trying to insert woke or like, you know, 2020 politics stuff into the book that she wrote in 1998, which wasn't there when she wrote it. And so she's kind of for a long time been tweeting a lot of stuff that people said, like, oh, it's not great, but then this has been done.
Okay, there are two things about that. One is that it's sort of become a meme that J.K. Rowling is going around saying stuff like, ooh, yeah, the Sorting Hat is non-binary and so on.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that J.K. Rowling is not actually that inclusive in her works, particularly, for all the fact that sort of the right wing has maybe dropped it a bit in time to claim that it's woke. It's not. You know, she's written three Jewish characters, all of whom's last name is Goldstein.
Mm.
It's worth noting. She still continues to use goblins as the sole money handlers of the wizarding world, who are described as hook names.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on that is not great as well as. But yeah, I think as you say, when you comment or when you reply to people's tweets or on Instagram and things like that, it does actually, the algorithms involved in the program do expose them to a wider range of people, because the algorithm thinks, oh, people are interacting with this, so we want to back them more. So yeah, one way I think to react to this is basically like, don't at her, don't reply to her. If you're going to talk about it, you know, make a separate thing about it rather than replying to the original content.
Yeah, screenshots are good for this sort of thing. The other problem is that J.K. Rowling she's not an ordinary TERF account, and she's fairly ubiquitous anyway.
Mm.
So it's not a sort of a... Because anything she quotes will effectively be a talking point.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that, although I said, you know, you can't monetize a tweet, that's not to say that these values of hers don't go into her work. There is a... she has written one transgender character in her body of work, and that is in a book called The Silkworm, one of the Cormorant Strike series. And that character falls into an awful lot of sort of bad stereotypes. They sort of immediately try and stab the detective, and then the detective says something like, to get information out of her, I think her name's Pippa, the detective Cormorant Strike says, if you don't tell me the information, I'll levy a case against you for assaulting me, and it's not good in prison for people like you, not for a pre-op, is the word, which is just...
So that's interesting that actually a lot of her stuff does end up in her work as well. And I think that's the thing that I think is interesting about a lot of this conversation is, do you still consume the work that someone's produced when they are, you know, outside of the work that's passing issues, and does it filter into the work? So, you know, I think I've said before, I'm a massive Harry Potter fan from when I was younger, absolutely obsessed with it. You know, I've played Quidditch when I was younger, it was like, you know, on all the Harry Potter forums and things. So for me, it is a very like a personal question about it. Like, do I still keep going back to the series that I have such a personal connection with my youth, when I know that the author of that series is creating all these problems, but also she wrote that series before she said those things. So, you know, at the moment, I'm sort of like stuck in the middle of that. Yeah.
I Personally, I have a very I had a similar upbringing with Harry Potter in the way that it was really important to me. I was always ready, my dad would read the books to me. I had a Ravenclaw scarf that would wear everywhere. But as I learned more and more about J.K. Rowling, I found myself kind of naturally just falling away from it. And it's now that I've become more actively aware of what she's doing and how it affects people like myself, I think that it is... When I see things that relate to Harry Potter, I begin to feel kind of awkward.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because that... It's interesting to think about how the community has developed beyond the source material. And you look, for example, you know, the Nottingham Harry Potter and Quidditch group here, it's just an incredible people there who are definitely part of the LGBTQ community. And for them, I know Philippa has been part of that group, but I know for them it's a community for people to come together. And it is interesting, especially on Tumblr. You'll see Tumblr, you know, and the relations to queer identities and stuff like that. So it's disappointing that the author of the work doesn't acknowledge it. But sometimes you've got to think, is a community larger than its original work?
It's maybe even sort of, Lindsay Ellis has done some brilliant videos about things like this, and she's done a series about... about the Transformers, and a part of it talks about auteur theory. So, the author of the work, how present are they, and what's the effect of the author on the work? And I think, for me, I feel like Harry Potter falls into those ones where actually they found himself. I don't mean that super present. It's quite a neutral style of writing, as opposed to something like a Tarantino movie. You know, it's Tarantino who's made it. In that case, the author is very present. Like, the director's present in the work. In Harry Potter, I don't really feel that's the case that much. And so, yeah, I agree. I feel like when you then, as the reader, read it, you take your own stuff from it in a way that lets you expand on it so much that you can kind of separate yourself a lot from it.
Especially with Harry Potter, I think, regardless of if that is the case or not, Harry Potter has come something way beyond the books of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, she makes money from that and supporting that. You know, can be worrying, but she, the movies, and every person who worked on the movies, or works in the theme parks nowadays, or who's just, you know, the plays, and stuff like that, these people may be, you know, they aren't hurt, and they're acting within this, but they bring something new to it when they perform, and it's, yeah, that's my thing at the moment.
It's worth noting that I have a sort of a pet idea of how J.K. Rowling functions. And I think part of that is just by virtue of being quite possibly the most famous living author with the most loved sort of book series. You know, I think her plan, she always said at the time, was 7 books and then never again.
Mm.
But then, of course, Twitter comes along and you've suddenly got all of these ways to get in contact with the writer. She introduces Pottermore once the 8th movie is out to keep bringing out lots of little things about characters. And the thing about that is, while it was largely well received at the time, when you put out a book, you've got lots of information and you can have a general positive effect.
Yeah.
But when you do stuff like Pottermore and you announce new things every time, it's just one point of information. It's much easier to have just one that you disagree with.
Yeah.
And that can turn on you. And then eventually more and more of those started happening, people started turning against her, and then we announced stuff like The Cursed Child, which won a lot of awards, but a lot of people were criticised for weird plot stuff, and then the Fantastic Beasts series, the first one was quite well received, the second one has some really, 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 really dodgy politics, it has to be said, including a Jewish woman joining the Nazis.
Yeah. And Ipsen will tell me if the relationship, but also like, one of their main Asian characters basically being extremely sexualized.
Yes, and the other Asian character has 2 lines.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think.
And a black woman gets
raped. Yeah, the canon of Harry Potter has now expanded way beyond the books. So, does that let you get more confusions?
I think, well, the way we approach it And, you know, at this point, J.K. Rowling's making money off of it, and we don't want to support it, and that's a discussion I think you can have internally with yourself on a lot. But I think the biggest thing at the moment is that we have to, obviously, J.K. Rowling is not queer friendly. She's not in any sort of way. But the community is, and to some people, it might mean a lot to them. Now, I think what we can say is that the community itself definitely is, and you are allowed to consume that media as a queer person, and you should enjoy it and be part of that. But I think we need to make sure that doesn't go too far and begin to agree and think that the media itself is queer friendly.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be a line drawn, and that needs to be specifically with the source content, and saying that this is not queer friendly, nor should it ever be considered it, regardless of how much queer watching she wants to do, and, you know, oh, Dumbledore was gay, or this or that. I think that is something we have to accept. But the communities around it, we can allow, and I think there's no reason to discourage someone from enjoying it.
I think there is a small complication in terms of the fact that all media on a large scale is done on a profit basis. For example, there's going to be more Fantastic Beasts films, which, if anyone goes to them, if it makes a profit, that's more money in J.K. Rowling's wallet. But also, in terms of bookstores, because there hasn't, I'm told in reading this, there haven't been any sort of tentpole series in the same way that there were in Harry Potter. So, you know, every few years you get a reprint of Harry Potter with new stuff.
Mm.
An awful lot of, say, Waterstones is filled up with Harry Potter merchandise. So it's worth noting that the continued sales of Harry Potter are actually being used by book chains to produce more stuff. Mm. So if Harry Potter goes down, then it inherently means it can't support other franchises so much.
Mm, I see.
Yeah.
I suppose also, then, the opposite side of that, a lot of stuff that you can buy that's related to Harry Potter isn't official. So, if you're on Etsy, who can buy Harry Potter earrings, Harry Potter scarf, you know, all of that stuff that is just going from individual maker who is doing up there, right? Just doing their own thing. And if, I would say that that side of it is, you know, probably completely fine because it's much more, it's an offshoot of tons of content in your own direction.
To add to that, use bookstores. I have no doubt that if you walk into any used bookstore in the UK, there's going to be a copy of some Harry Potter book in there. And I think that's the way to do it. I mean, not only are you supporting a good secondhand, but at the same time, you could explore the book and you get to enjoy it.
Yeah. I'd like to expand this also a little bit. So obviously, J.K. Rowling's not the only person that, you know, this discussion is happening around. So, I think a really good example that happened recently, well, a bad example, I suppose, depending on how you look at it, the chap from who made the music for Skyrim, he was accused, I'm not sure if he was actually convicted, but certainly was accused of quite damning evidence of sexually harassing two women. So there kind of brings out a different example of it. Skyrim as a game is created by so many people, but the music is quite an integral part of playing the game, unless you muted it and you listened. Played. So stuff like that I find is even more in the grey area. You know, if I was going to play Skyrim now, one, would it affect my experience playing it, because every time I hear the music that I start thinking about that. But also then, yeah, should I, if I haven't already bought Skyrim, would I go out and buy it to take it as tiny amount, but then everyone else who made the game hasn't done that? So this is a real difficult question, but yeah, what do you think about that sort of side as well, when it is a multi-person project?
This is especially difficult because I've been playing a lot of Skyrim as of recently.
I mean, we talked about also quite a while back, you know, Blizzard, when there was lots of stuff going on there. You know, do you stop playing the game just because something's happening? Mm. Or do you sort of wait and see how they handle it? Or it's so difficult.
Yeah, it's one person who I think you're going to complain, so you're going to hear it. But sometimes you kind of have to move beyond that. I think no longer does that music belong to him.
Mm.
I think, and that's something that as a community can come decide. And that music belongs to the game now. And we don't want to give, if we give artistic credit to him, of course, but we shouldn't praise him. We shouldn't do this kind of stuff for him.
And we can also impose the game just to say, we can say, we don't want to buy anything in the future if you employ that person. Or like, if you really happy with them, we don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really difficult though, because I think at the same time, you don't want to say, oh, this is how you should feel when you consume this thing. Because everyone is going to have a different experience. Mm-hmm. And some people won't be bothered by it, and some people will. And I don't think you can just say, like, no, everyone needs to absolutely hate it straight away. That's just not that.
Well, ultimately, it comes down to two things. It comes down to, one, does the company involved believe that having that person is more profitable than not having that person?
Yeah.
And secondly, it comes down to, actually, do people of a heightened celebrity status actually effectively evade the law on stuff like this? Because, you know, in an ordinary sort of situation, on like a working class, middle class sort of situation, if you break the law in that sort of way, generally you're sent to prison. But when you're a celebrity, you can generally skirt justice and continue in your profession regardless.
And that's difficult with, it's difficult with the idea that we want to make sure everyone's innocent until proven guilty, but then when you have special privileges like that,
and then
it kind of feels like, oh, well, it's on the public now to make that decision. So, but it's at a larger scale of, can we trust our justice system and all that kind of stuff, but, yeah.
I was just going to say, yeah, I feel like sometimes, it can always go over as well. I think we kind of bandied about that term cancel culture, don't we? It's like, well, if someone doesn't mean you immediately cancel everything you do, should be fired, and like, that is their entire life. Some of them hopefully have enough money to then go off and do whatever we don't want to hear about in the world. But it can affect other people. I think an interesting example for this, who's, again, it's like a sort of a real grey area, Dan Harmon, who's created the Community and then so when we were creating Community, he was head writer. He basically harassed a writer on his staff to
Megan
try and, yeah, that's her, to try and get her to go out with him, and then he didn't fire her, or
I don't think he fired her.
But basically harassed her a lot.
Yes, I think she quit.
But he came forward himself and publicly said, this is what happened. Obviously, it was really wrong of me to do that. I've apologised to her. I've made it right with her. And publicly admitted it. Now, for me, I don't know if that's necessarily better that he said it as opposed to being exposed.
I kind of like it that he said it.
He has shown, he's taken steps to show he has learned from it, which I think is good. But it's like,
I think it hits all of the hallmarks of a sincere apology. And I think, you know, the fact he did it on his own platform, in a way. There are two sides to that. One is he's actually communicating completely to the people that he's talking about, who would idolise him, saying, actually, on this basis, I'm not that good. But also, on the other hand, you know, if you are communicating it to a group of fans. And I think, you know, he lays it out, he doesn't say, you know, have sympathy for me or anything. But it's worth noting that he's always said that Jeff Winger from Community is based on him, and, you know, that character does an awful lot of speeches that sort of twist words to his advantage. So it's, you know, and he's definitely put in the work and said, actually, you know what, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get better, I know not to do this now, I know the culture now of why this is bad and the larger ramifications it can have. It doesn't seem to have negatively affected Megan Gans's career, which is good.
No, yeah.
She's still doing phenomenal things.
And I think also once he had realised and he realised he'd done wrong, he then pushed to help her.
Yeah.
Which I think is a real sign that he had some changes and he wasn't trying to make an excuse for it. But yeah, it does feel weird now because I was enjoying watching things before. I've heard about it and I was like, even though I was kind of like, I feel like he has apologised and he's said what's happened, I don't really enjoy watching him anymore. It's an odd feeling.
I'm gonna slip this in real quick. I think there is something about a property kind of transcending its creator, and I think one of the greatest things, like one of the biggest examples of that, is Minecraft and Notch. Mm-hmm. Notch is horribly problematic. Again, trans issues and similar. But that didn't stop Minecraft from being this amazing game. You know, his name's been removed from the credits and stuff like that at this point, but it shows that these communities that we love and these works of art that we love can continue on without even their original creator. Yeah.
That's actually a brilliant example because I didn't know he'd made Minecraft. And so actually, yeah, taking their name out of it and then carrying on with the thing that they did, actually, in that case, has worked really well. Because I would have been like, you know, that lot.
I will say, I imagine they have to be bought out.
Well, certainly. I mean, that's a whole legal discussion. But I think in terms of a philosophical idea that can it continue from, can we continue to love it? I love Minecraft. I'm a trans person who is definitely offended by the things that he said. So, yeah, I think that shows that it can continue. But there's a lot of discussion on it, and I would highly recommend, if you're interested in the cancel culture stuff, one of my favorite YouTubers, ContraPoints, recently did a video on the entirety of cancel culture. It was almost 2 hours long. And there's so much to more learn and kind of understand and benefits and the downsides of it. So I highly recommend if you want to learn more, it's a good place to go.
It's worth noting, just on the basis of suggesting that, is that ContraPoints was caught in a sort of a cancel culture sort of scandal herself, in promoting the voice of a transphobic, a transmedicalist, voice while doing it. So just watch it with that in mind.
Well, she explains that in the video itself. Yeah. And the idea of how that became, that kind of out of control. And this idea of, well, A led to B, B led to C, and then people are making assumptions based on C, not A. So.
I think that kind of brings it in my circle, actually, because I think J.K. Rowling is a great example of someone who is in such a position of power, and people love her work so much that they feel that they don't want to sort of criticise, like they don't criticise as harshly as she probably should be. ContraPoints, I think, you know, I listen to sort of what's going on there, and whether those have to happen. Seems basically the other way, people being really harsh straight away.
Well, it's easy for her as a minority.
Exactly, and, so yeah. I think it's sort of, you end up somewhere in the middle, perhaps, of that. Like, maybe find out what's been going on, make your own mind up, but think about where your money's going when you are choosing to consume media. But ultimately, I think it is your decision. And whether it affects you and makes you not want to watch it anymore is going to be really personal, because it might be something that really bothers you, or it might be something that really bothers you all the time. So.
I think that's great. I think that's a great way to wrap it up.
Yeah. So, with that, we're coming to an end. Obviously, massive topics, try and fit into a very short amount of time. If you have any thoughts on this, please, please, please talk to us on social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram as Nerd of Math, URN. And we'll be back same time next week on Sundays, 4:30 to 5. Until then, we'll say goodbye.